Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Great, good day to you. Good morning. And it is a gorgeous day to get out and play a round of golf. It's going to be a beautiful trade wind day. A little rain over the mountains, sunny along the ocean, perfect conditions to play. You may want to try Ocean's 11 at Poipu Bay. It's between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning. It's $115. You play 11 holes, and you still have time to get out with the family and do whatever you'd like to do the rest of the day on beautiful Kauai. It's been a week, or a little bit less, since we got smashed by, well, we didn't, the Europeans did. U.S. smashed the Euros. The score was... Well, it's difficult to talk about what the score was because it was so lopsided, but it was about time. It made the Ryder Cup real again, a real competition for three times. The Europeans beat us, and this time we beat them decisively, to put it mildly. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Peter Alice, BBC correspondent, European Tour champion, author of 20 books, including Golf, The Cure for the Grumpy Old Man. We'll be back with Mr. Alice right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Poipu Bay Golf Course. 18 championship holes. Hosted PGA of America Grand Slam of Golf for 10 years. It's an outstanding golf course for golfers of all abilities. The Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. And Futura Stone. Futura Stone's master craftsmen can turn your building, company, or home into artwork. Futura Stone, only the best. By Claude Brousseau, master PGA professional, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Vision 54 coach, and Aim Point certified Golf Channel lead coach. You need a lesson with Claude Brousseau. And by Raynor Doors, the overhead door used to protect the Lamborghini showroom. Provide lasting security and safety for your business. Raynor Doors. And Creative Plumbing. Whether you're a building, a shopping center, a store, a custom home, or townhouse, call Creative Plumbing. Because it has to be done right. Creative Plumbing.
All right, we're going to go straight to the UK right now. Peter Alice, voice of golf for the BBC. You've heard him on ESPN and ABC, author of 20 books, golf course architect, belfry speaker. And I've always wished I could have been at an evening with Alice, an evening with Alice where he talks. He's got such a sense of humor. Golf History with Peter Alice is one of the books he's written. On the App Store, you can find Golf, The Cure for the Grumpy Old Man. And he's a philanthropist. Peter Alice has his wheelchair charity, Helping for Heroes, and the profits from the sale of his latest book going to his charity. Welcome to the show, Mr. Alice.
Well, that's a wonderful... I think you're talking about my twin brother. It can't be me.
No, it's you, sir. I absolutely know this. Let's go straight to the Ryder Cup. 17-11. The U.S. trounced the Euros this time around. Were you surprised at how lopsided that was?
No, well, not really. I think you're enjoying this. So you're loving words like thrashed and trounced and all the rest. I really don't mind because we've won it a few times. I was in the teams when we never won, and you were about to give up the ghost, so it was said, because you were so fed up with winning. So I'm quite happy for you to gloat, and I do believe you're gloating. You may be going a little too far with your gloating, but the fact was we lost the last... We only got 1 point in the last four or five singles when everything was lost, and we had a couple of old-timers that perhaps had... Well, one certainly in Westwood who maybe had played a Ryder Cup too far, and his nerves were shaky. And we had a couple of rookies that really... Well, one of them was Willett, who won the Masters. We have to see what happens to him in the future. He might be a one-trick pony. We may never see him really again, but I hope not. But it was a wonderful Ryder Cup. The Europeans had to lose sometime. It was on American soil. The weather was superb. The golf course was in magnificent condition. Huge crowds, a little bit raucous at times. Wonderful golf. It was an amazing occurrence. I was delighted to be there.
And you were there. And I've got to ask you, I personally, since my father's English from the Derby area, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed by those sometimes raucous crowds. I found it over-the-top raucous, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we've had a few like that over the years. I'm afraid that's modern society. It's become, ever since it was okay to swear on television and see fornication on film, for people to pay good money in the theatre to see, our standards have slipped, both in language and behaviour, and fueled by booze, drink. It's not very pleasant. It's almost getting like our football over here. We have people like that who go and watch our football, who should really be in a cage. They should be locked up on some island in a cage somewhere. And you could go and push a stick through the bars and prod them, you know.
Well, Martin Keimer said he heard things. He heard names being called, words that he would never put in his own mouth, or one shouldn't put in one's mouth, you know. And it just seemed awfully loud and awfully distasteful. And I thought to myself, well, you know, when the U.S. team goes over to France, what are they going to hear? Is it going to be like that?
Well, probably, but it'll be in French, and not many of them will be able to understand it. So the good thing is that, or the bad thing for you, is there were a lot of French spectators come out. There'll be huge crowd. They're talking about 60,000 people there. And a lot of the French, golf to a lot of French people, is just an attractive occasion where we go along at the weekend and we have a lovely lunch and a glass of wine and have a few putts, and they really don't know an awful lot about it. So it'll be very noisy. They won't be able to keep the cameras away. There'll be telephones ringing. People will be singing, oh, the Marseillaise, and it'll be all hell will be let loose. And if the weather's kind, it'll be a glorious, stupid occasion again.
So is this, you know, the question is the Ryder Cup, it's no longer an exhibition, is it? Did it start as an exhibition?
No. Certainly, I hope to God it never becomes an exhibition. I think that the fierce pride in your own skill, and I think that'll keep the pot boiling. I don't think it'll ever be a question of an exhibition. I think your President's Cup is a little bit more like an exhibition, although certainly the non-American players want to win. But the Ryder Cup has great passion, built up over the last 20 years. The beginning of it in the late 20s, early 30s, the passion was there. Then the war came and it wasn't played. And then you won every year monotonously, time and time and time. Although the games were sometimes very close, you were the champions by a distance. And then suddenly in the mid-80s, Europe got going, and it's been wonderful ever since. The passion has been there. And I hope, you know, the captains talk a lot of nonsense and the press write a lot of nonsense now. The role of you can't do anything if you don't have good players who play well. Doesn't matter how many wonderful things you lay on, whether it's table tennis tables or a pool table or big television sets or cashmere sweaters. If the players don't play, teams don't win.
Yeah.
And I think the press and the television build the captain up now into almost a godlike figure. They're more like Harry Potter's father. You know, they're wizards who can conjure up magical things, which is rubbish.
Well, there's got to be something to talk about before the golf starts, right?
Oh, absolutely. Of course there has. It's all a joyous nonsense.
Yes.
With great skill and nerve put in. I love the nerve and the skill.
And speaking of nerve and skill, Patrick Reed is our Ian Poulter, isn't he?
Yes, he is, yes. Yes, he's just as noisy and just as flamboyant and just as annoying.
Annoying!
Both of them should be put out together. Both of them are wonderful. They should play each other every day for 5 years and get it out of the system.
I want to know what happened to Martin Keimer. Here, this poor young man was the point that won for the Euros, jumping into the arms of one of his teammates, wrapping his legs around his waist pretty much. And this year, I mean, boy, the poor man. Now he's 17 under, it looks like, and in competition on the European Tour this week.
I've just been watching the golf from St. Andrews. Yes, he and his father, it's a strange downhill competition, which is it's a bit like the old Bing Crosby Pro-Am for three rounds, and then the pros play on their own. And Martin and his father are, I think, lying second or third at the moment, so he's showing a bit of good form, but he hasn't been playing all that well for about a year, Martin. Not really up to his usual standard, but we've had a really good autumn. It's pretty cold, getting cold up at up in the north in Scotland, but it's had a sunny day. It's been good. You know, it's a great event going on. I don't know whether you'll be able to watch it on in a way on your World Channel or whatever it is. The Golf Channel probably show it. I don't know.
Yes, we do. We see it on Golf Channel. We love watching European Tour on Golf Channel.
Yeah, it's good.
Yes, we're talking with Peter Allis, Voice of Golf, BBC. He was at Ryder Cup. Of course, we had to talk about Ryder Cup. It was just last weekend. It seems with all the things going on in the world that Tiger Woods has announced he's going to play in the Safeway Open. Has that made huge news in the UK?
Yeah, yes, it has. It's people are showing great interest. Well, Tiger Woods was the best person, the best golfer I saw in the period of the last 20 years. He was head and shoulders above everybody else, certainly for 18 of those years. And I would hate him to disappear from the golfing scene, leaving the memories of his last 6 or 9 months or 12 months on the golf course because of injury. Mm-hmm. If he comes back, I hope he does something. I mean, he's 40 years of age now. Goodness gracious, fancy being 40. Poor old soul, but he can still hopefully get round without a walker. But the thing is that I hope he can play well, because I want to remember him as a giant and a star. I want him to perhaps win a tournament, maybe not a major, and then say, well, folks, that's it. My bones are creaking. I've tried my best. I've enjoyed it. But I'm off. I'm not going to play in the seniors. I'm not going to do anything. And that, remember me as I was. That's what I'd like to do.
Yes. Well, the one record he can go after is Sam Snead, 82 rather, because Tiger Woods has already won 25% of the tournaments he teed up at. He won them. He missed cuts maybe 12, 14 times, and that may be an exaggeration on my part.
It's remarkable, but every so often you have great players. If you go back 150 years, there were players that started off that did magical things at the time, and then you came through the Bobby Jones and the Walter Hagans and the Ben Hogans, Byron Nelsons. All through that period, there have been great people in their own time, and of course, then you had Jack Nicklaus, who's the greatest, still the greatest one in my lifetime. If you're talking overall, because if you look at what Jack didn't win, the number of times he was second and third, it's just incredible. Nicklaus is the most incredible one of all. But in his time, Woods dominated things even more than Nicklaus did in his time.
Yes, absolutely. Peter Allis is a champion on the European Tour. Peter Allis played Ryder Cup. Peter Allis is the voice of golf for the BBC. He's an author, 20 books. You can download Golf, The Cure for the Grumpy Old Man. Fabulous, as you can tell, a sense of humor. And I want to go back because your playing experience gives you the insight that most of us don't have. Playing at the level of the European Tour, in competition, Ryder Cup. We watch like Martin Keimer. He's won majors. He's had up years, then he goes down. Then he has an up year, then he goes down. Jordan Spieth, major winner. It would look like he was on track to beat every record, Tiger's record, maybe Grand Slam of golf, you know, doing all those things. And then, boom, what happens? And everybody wants to know this. Everybody wants to know. The recreational golfer wants to know. The amateur who's doing quite well wants to know. Where does the game go?
Well, that's like asking Burt Bacharach why he hasn't written any good tunes lately. You know, and God, you know, well, he's dead now, but George Gershwin died when he was about 39 and he wrote Under the... why do people have these moments where in their particular sphere of life they're doing well and then it just disappears? Why is that comedian no longer funny? Why does that footballer no longer score the touchdowns as he used to do 5 years, 1 year, 6 months ago? Is it nerve? Is it skill? Is it mental? Usually, in my opinion, it's nerve. It's what goes on in your head. Golf being a slow, pedestrian game, once you can strike the ball well, then you learn how to play. The two things don't come together at the same time, in my opinion. That's my own. Some people say I have quirky opinions, which I agree with, but I think you learn how to play. You learn when to attack. You learn when to defend. You learn when you accept things that are, it's not your day. You have to accept when somebody else has a piece of outrageous luck, good luck, when you have a bit of bad luck. All these things play on your mind, and the longer you go, it's like driving on a motorway at 100 miles an hour all day long, up and down, up and down. Sooner or later, the chances are you're going to have an accident. If you never go on a motorway, you'll never have an accident. If you never climb Mount Everest, you'll never fall off it. It's very simple philosophy, but that's what I look at the way it is. I think the people you've mentioned, Spieth, had a wonderful cup. He may come back again, but I noticed early on in the piece he has a streak inside him where he gets agitated, cross, call it whatever you'll, angry, and it's beginning to show now because things don't always go exactly as he intended them to do, and that's a mental thing. So they always used to say in my day that to be a really good golfer, because you have time to think between shots, you've either got to have a brilliant mind that you can control or be a little bit simple, a little bit like an old country boy who really doesn't bother about too many things. He just plods along like an old cart horse. He's not dreaming of winning the Derby or something like that. He just plods on and gets the job done. It's so much of it is mental, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. Of course, the physical side comes in. The bones wear out, the muscles wear out, you slow down. But most people have a period where they're very good. You look at the golf over the years. Nick Faldo had a relatively short career. Arnold Palmer had a relatively short winning major. Four majors after about 1973. Now, if you'd taken a bet then, will Arnold Palmer win another major? Or how many more will he win? You wouldn't have got very long odds. Of course he'll win more, but he never did. Uh-huh. Some people have a long time, like Hale Irwin. Somebody like that goes on and on and on. How? Why? Well, they keep their nerve, they keep their desire, and they keep their nerves under control.
Yes.
It's very simple, but it's very difficult.
Very simple to say it and very difficult to do. And what you said about Jordan Spieth getting upset when things don't go according to plan, it's like man makes plans and the golf gods laugh. You know,
yes, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Now, you brought up a huge, huge moment leading up to Ryder Cup. And, boy, when Arnold Palmer died.
Dear friend, I met Arnold in 1960, and I don't know, we hit it off straight away. I mean, I only saw him two or three times a year, but we always got on well, and we found ourselves... when he used to come over here many times, we were staying in the same hotel, and we used to stay up. We were not the first to go to bed, and we used to sit in the corner and have a drink and talk about life and things and kids and children and motor cars and aeroplanes and all the things that ordinary folks sort of talk about. He was lovely, and his dear wife, she was, you know, sadly had that stroke and died, and his family. He was just a lovely man. I thought he was rather fortunate to have two daughters and no sons. Now, that may sound strange, being the son of a famous father myself. I know how difficult it can be, and particularly in the United States. Gary Player had lots of sons who've all done well, but they've never achieved things like their father. And it's not often that happens, that the son becomes better than the father, because they're hounded when they're making their way. Ah, you played well today, but you'll never be as good as your father. There are always those sort of people who say silly things.
I hadn't even thought about that, sir. That's very good. Lucky to have daughters.
Well, I think so. Yeah. I think that it's like if the ideal world must be to be a film director. Spielberg's recognizable. You have all the fame, all the money, and nobody recognizes you. Wonderful.
Yes, it is. And you know, when you talk about not remembering the thing that didn't work out and the plan that you made when you're on the course, that's Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson has ability not to, it's like, poof, that didn't happen. Next.
Yeah, well, that's fine. He's not the most athletic looking figure. He's got this strange beard that he grows, and he just sort of enjoys his friends and his life. And he is making, at this moment, a very good living. I don't think he's got any great aspirations to be the greatest player in the world, because he probably knows he's not going to be the greatest player in the world. They all come into golf now. What's your ambition? I want to be the guy. I want to beat Tiger Woods. I want to beat Jack Nicklaus. I want to do better than Arnold Palmer. They never come in as they did in my day. I'm trying to make a living. I'm hoping. I'm not very good at mathematics. I'm not going to be a lawyer. But I play golf quite well. I kick a football quite well. I do baseball quite well. I'm trying to make a living. Nobody does that anymore.
No. Yeah. This. Tell us a little bit about your work as a philanthropist, Peter Alice's Voice of Golf, BBC, and one of the books that you can get on the App Store. He's written Golf History with Peter Alice. The Golf History with Peter Alice iPad app spans seven centuries, from golf's early Dutch and Scottish origins to the golden years of Bobby Jones. 400 stories, 500 photographs, 100 videos. This historical guide is both informative and entertaining. It has to be if it's Peter Alice, right? So you also have the Golf, the Cure for the Grumpy Old Man. Which one of the profits goes to your wheelchair charity, Help for Heroes?
Well, you said that I was philanthropist, and I thought they collected stamps.
But, no, you raise money for good work, sir.
Yeah, I don't think I'm mixed up in the book that covers 500 years and 400 things. That's not me. But my book, the last one was I've been touring the theaters around here. I finished about 6 months ago. For 2 years, I've been going around all over the country, and with a one man show, and I've been selling my books there, Golf for Cure for a Grumpy Old Man, and all the profits of them have gone to Help for Heroes. But my wheelchair crusade is something I started in 1975, and we've just gone over £12 million for that one.
Wow.
But in little, nothing huge. We've had no huge donations. It's just something that's gone on and on and on. I'm very proud of it.
I would be. And you can go to Peter Alice, and you can find him online, peteralice.com, .uk books. But you'll find it. You'll find it. Just go to Peter Alice, and right away he'll come up. And you'll find his website, and you'll find all of his books. And we must make this a regular. I need to talk to you some more.
I think I need you as my agent. Don't forget to tell them it's spelled A-double-L-I-double-S-S. A-double-L-I-double-S for sugar. They probably look for A-L-Y-C-E or A-L-I-C-E.
No.
A-double-L-I-double-S. That's me.
There you go. A-L-L-I-S-S. That's Peter Alice, Voice of Golf, BBC. Thank you for being on the Golf Club Show. Thank you.
Bye.
Aloha. We're going to come back and talk with Judy, Susie, and Gloria, LPGA champions, all getting together for the Marilyn Smith tournament. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Have you ever seen a building or a magazine photo or traveled to a place that captured your imagination? Futuristone's Master Craftsman can transform your vision into a reality. Does your project call out for a permeable pavement, parking area, pool deck, plaza, or grand entry? bring us your plans. Futura Stone's unique outdoor products and services can turn your resort, building, or home's exterior into an oasis that will last a lifetime. Call Futura Stone, 841-7440 across Hawaii. Futura Stone, only the best. As we jet from place to place, we buckle in knowing they maintain their planes daily. They don't put off repairs till the next month. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your water line, sewer line, or fire line broke at the worst possible moment. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or commercial center, high-rise, townhouse, or hen house. You need your job done now. Done right. That's Creative Plumbing!
Your experts on call.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family, invite some friends.
When you stand on that tee box and see that view, you'll know why Hoipu Bay makes any day special. Come join the Aloha. Visit our pro shop and take home a memory at Hoipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
Work the ball, play more break, be aggressive. Wow! 6 feet past the cup. What was I thinking? Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
It's the Marilyn Smith 8th Annual Tournament, raising money for the LPGA Scholarship Fund. Marilyn Smith LPGA Charity Pro-Am is on Sunday, and then the tournament is on Monday. I had the pleasure of going. So many people get together and have such a great time. And the time I was there, Marilyn actually went out on the course in the heat of the day. This is in Arizona, mind you. And it was scorching hot, 108 degrees, and she was out on the course taking pictures with every foursome that had signed up to play in her tournament, which gets sold out. But in addition to the Marilyn Smith 8th Annual Tournament, there's the 60s and 70s and 80s players getting together, the LPGA reunion, and I am so happy to have Judy Rankin, Susie Berning, and Gloria Arett on the show with me today. What a pleasure, ladies. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I'm so thrilled. Gloria spent all the time putting this. 8 years ago, there was a get-together. The gals got together, 60s, 70s, and 80s. That was a time of playing together, and I'll start with you, Gloria, of when there was a real sense of camaraderie working together to make this thing, this LPGA, happen.
Absolutely, and we were very fortunate that, we had over 100 players that got together, hadn't seen each other in probably 25, 30 years, and it was a great success.
Huge success. Do you remember Hawaii 5-0? Whose house did you all get together at?
Well, our first big party was at Susie McAllister's Morton's house, who Susie was married to Gary Morton, who was married to Lucille Ball. And that was our first huge party. And then after that, we went over to HB and Jim MacArthur's house for our second party.
So you can see how one would want to have another party 8 years later after having the Palm Springs Fete. That must have been amazing. Gloria Arett is the 1966 LPGA champion. Susie Berning, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's great having you. Susie, another champion, 15 LPGA Tour titles, including 4 major championships on the LPGA. Do you participate in the Marilyn Smith tournament to raise money for the LPGA scholarships regularly?
Yes, I do. I think I've played in every year they've had it. And actually, I've been playing with a real good friend of Marilyn's, and just got a text from them that they couldn't arrive because they live in Florida and they had to get their home from the Matthew. But anyway, Marilyn does a wonderful job and has so many friends throughout the country, and it's just an honor to be part of her program.
Oh, yeah. People just sign up. It sells out like that. And everyone from late, great Arnold Palmer to Jack Nicklaus to Judy Rankin give of their time and donate things. In fact, welcome to the show, Golf Channel's lead commentator for LPGA tournament broadcasts, and of course, a 26-time LPGA champion, Judy Rankin. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, for having all of us.
Absolutely. I got to tell you that you bring a knowledge from your playing time and an observational skill that probably beats everybody in the world of television commentating. And your measured and just insight is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for doing a fabulous job.
Oh, thank you very much. You might be overplaying it, but I do appreciate it. It's a big treat to kind of stay close to our industry and what we all always did, and to watch how it has changed and how it's grown and how it's evolved into what are now today the best players in the world.
You know what, Judy Rankin joined the tour when she was 17, then won 26 tour events. And this is what I'm talking about, because we have so many young players going into the game. Judy, when you were 17 and decided to join, become a professional player, that was that an unusual? Did a lot of 17-year-olds join?
No, and it was probably not a very good decision. I think I was too young. I don't know. Maybe I would have done better not starting quite so young, and maybe I learned a lot pretty young, and maybe I don't know what's right. I know that if I had it all to do over again, I would have waited a year or two, I think. It was just an unreasonable thing to do. There really wasn't any money to play for, and it was kind of ridiculous. And I did not have a team on the road like these kids do today.
I didn't start golf until I was 15.
it was kind of a knee-jerk thing where a company, in fact, it was the First Flight Golf Company, which was actually the beginning somewhere twisted in there of the Arnold Palmer Golf Company, that offered me a little bit of money to travel the tour and play. And I came from a pretty modest background, and it seemed like maybe a thing to do, but I can remember I only played 9 tournaments when I was 17, but one of my great memories of that year was standing in front of a scoreboard in Baltimore, Maryland, with a flashlight with a friend, checking out the scores because I was about to win my first $50.
Wow. That was a lot of money.
Well, at least it was money. It was something.
Judy was also our first $100,000 winner in Horsham, 76, in Horsham, Pennsylvania, I believe, was when she, I think she won that tournament, and that boosted her over the $100,000, which was just an amazing amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you talk about it, I've spent time with Marilyn, not like you folks, of course, but we talked about when she would go out and promote. Y'all would set up in the 50s, they'd set up the tournament, literally set up the course and get everything ready for the tournament. So they would be completely in charge of everything, and then they would go and play, and then they would get in their cars and drive to the next tournament, and then they would begin it all over again. But they also did promotional events. So they'd go out to the local baseball field and they'd do trick shots in center field to entertain the crowd and say, hey, the girls are in town, we're playing golf, come and watch us. There was a camaraderie, there was a passion. And when Judy, when you say, you know, I shouldn't have gotten into it at that age, maybe, but you were doing it because it was your passion, or was it because you were really good at it?
It had nothing to do.
Yeah. I always say, more than being my passion, I think sometimes what you're going to do finds you. And it turned out, you know, I could hit a golf ball and, you know, do a few things, so I think it was just because I had a chance to try it, and it turned out I had a little bit of ability. And, you know, I was directed, I think, because of that. To be very honest, there were other things in the world that seemed more glamorous to me, but I didn't have, you know, the talent for some other things. I think in the back of my mind, I always dreamed of being an ice skater. First be able to ice skate.
That's awesome. That's all.
I think sometimes what you're going to do finds you. And I think that was more the case with me.
Well, from what I've read, Judy Rankin won the Missouri Amateur at the age of 14 in 1959. The next year, she was low amateur at the U.S. Women's Open and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in 1961 at the age of 16. So you had a lot of ability, and I can see that if with that kind of ability at that young age, that you would have been propelled. I've certainly saying, okay, this is what I can do, and here's some money that's attached to it. That's great. I would have been sorely tempted to just follow that along. And you obviously had tremendous ability and carried you into a great career that's moved you forward into television, where you get to be in the field that you've become a part of so deeply and still pursue it even after your playing years are behind you. And yet you have, you still play because you enjoy the game, right?
I play very, very little. I play just a tiny bit with friends and family, a granddaughter and my son. But I really play very little for different reasons. There have been long breaks in playing golf for me, whether it was my health or my husband's health or one thing or another. But let me just add that.
May I add something?
Yes.
She's the only female golfer in the world that has a golf course named after her. A course in Midland, Texas called the Judy.
The Judy. Wow, that is so cool. I think Judy's probably getting a little nervous about us doing all of this talking about you, huh, Judy?
Yeah, it's a little nine-hole course that I kind of encourage, little short course that I encourage my club to build. And as a surprise to me, they named it after me, but... What I wanted to get to this, which is these people, these women, we still call each other girls affectionately, it becomes such a big part of your life. And my husband and I raised a son out on the tour who turned out to be fairly well-adjusted. And I just want to say that this was so much of my neighborhood. The LPGA Tour, and it certainly in our day, and to some degree today, it is a really good place to be.
Susie Berning, 15 LPGA Tour titles, including 4 major championships. What is your experience of the LPGA Tour?
Well, when I first joined that out there, I didn't know what I was getting into. Frankly, I didn't play that much amateur golf. I think Betsy Cohen and Beth Stone, who were both from Oklahoma, I beat them in an amateur tournament. They turned pro maybe 3 years before I did. And I thought, well, if I can beat them, maybe I'm going to go try this. Really had no idea what I was getting into. The pro that kind of gave me lessons, he did not encourage me to join the tour. He said, you're not going to like traveling, you don't understand it, and blah, 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 which was true. Because I was more in love with horses at the time. And it's because of my horses, that's why I took up golf. Because when I ran over a couple golf greens and down some fairways on a public golf course and destroyed the hole. So my reward was this gentleman gave me golf lessons. So anyway, once I turned pro and got into it, and it's only because of the help of, became real good friends with Marty Nagy early and Gloria Armstrong and Judy. And they really, you know, guided me in what to do and what not to do out there. And I just all of a sudden fell in love with golf. And I had enough ability to continue playing and won a few tournaments early. And just the rest is history.
Well, the big history is 3 U.S. Opens, which we would all give a lot to have just one of them.
For sure.
Yes, exactly. So,
Judy has, I forget, probably she should have won Wingfoot. in 1972, but I ended up birdieing the 17th hole, which, because I was not even in contention going into Sunday. But I became lucky. Anyway, but you have to be lucky, too. And then I won two of them, and one was given to me, but anyway.
Somehow I don't think it was given to you, unless luck had a big part of it. May we take a quick break? We're talking with Gloria Arrett, Susie Berning, and Judy Rankin about the Marilyn Smith Pro-Am that's tomorrow. They're having a get-together, to say the least, a reunion of the 50s, 60s, 70s. Did I get that right, Gloria, the 50s, 60s, and 70s?
Yes. Yes. We had a few last night from the 80s, but they were...
They were
lucky to be there, because there's a camaraderie that I think kept not only the game kept you going, but there must have been your friendships that kept you going and moving from tournament to tournament, getting you through the downs and just pulling you through along to the highs and then celebrating them together. There's a family, as Judy Rankin said, it was her neighborhood. I think that's beautifully said, because your neighborhood went with you. We're going to come back and talk more about the Marilyn Smith 8th Annual Tournament to raise money for the LPGA Scholarship Fund right after we continue to thank the people who make this show possible.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf easier with the coaching of master PGA teaching professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game, scratch golfer or just beginner. As a two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, now with the Ko'olina Golf Academy, you will get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Strong, quiet, dependable, reliable. Sounds like a great husband for my daughter. But really, it's your new Rainer garage door. Your home deserves the beauty and dependability that only Rainer can give. Call us today at 676-3667. Ask about our fall special and save money as you improve your home. That's Rainer Hawaii, 676-D-O-O-R.
It's the Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor links. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
We're talking with LPGA champions Susie Berning, Gloria Arrett, and Judy Rankin, who's also, of course, on Golf Channel. And you watch when you watch the LPGA. Right now, they're doing their Asia Swing. Hana Zhang, Shen Chen Feng, He Yong Park, Lee Ann Pace, Brooke Henderson. They're all in contention right now. And, It's fascinating watching the LPGA, the tour, the way it's grown, the names that are now just involved. You look at the flags on the leaderboard. It's like watching the Olympics. Every week the LPGA is playing, and it's a huge, huge impact on the in Asia when women go back after their victories in B Park, winning a medal in the gold medal in the Olympics, and she returns to Korea. She's she's a an idol. She's a, it's difficult to put a name on it. Judy Rankin, when these girls are superstars, aren't they?
Well, they are, and I really, I all the time try to encourage people to come see today's players play in person one time, because I think they'll be fans if they ever saw the power and the expertise of the best players in the world today in women's golf.
And they have huge teams of people who help them develop that skill, something that the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you girls, did you talk to one another about your game if something was off? Let's say, Susie, if you're having a bad day, would you go to Judy or Gloria to say, can you take a look at what I'm doing here?
Well, actually, I remember an experience I had where I wasn't swinging so good, and Mickey Wright volunteered to come out to the range and help me shorten my golf swing.
Wow.
I'm so impressed, because that's my first year out there, and I don't think I've been paired with Mickey yet. So, I mean, the girls helped each other because they wanted the tour to grow, and we wanted everybody to be the best players they could be. Nowadays, I don't know if the players help each other, but the players have their own coaches, their own trainers, their own psychology people. I mean, they travel with 10 different people. So it's totally changed. It's big business now.
Big business it is, indeed. Judy Rankin has donated her time. You could, Judy, have you done this before? People have, did you auction yourself off to be played with?
Well, I haven't been here before. This is my first experience. And I can't tell you a whole lot about the drill, but I'm happy to be here and,
I'll give you $5 to play with Judy.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to play with Judy Rankin. Are you kidding? I can only imagine. You know, $1,000 seemed like an opportunity that I wish I could have taken up. Just for the stories, and that's one thing with Marilyn Smith. This is the 8th annual tournament to raise money for the LPGA Scholarship Fund, and she's tireless. This woman is like a dynamo. She sends me birthday cards, Christmas cards. She doesn't forget. You know, she's always there. Sunday is the pro-am from 1 to 3. And there's the Sunday tea and at the Orange Tree Golf Resort and Arizona Golf Hall of Fame's Bill Huffman's going to interview Marilyn Smith and Shirley Spork and Judy Rankin. There's a silent auction, the book signing with Marilyn Smith, expo tables, including EWGA will be there. Then the Monday tournament is shotgun at 8 o'clock. You got to get there early, because I'm told you'll be able to meet Judy Rankin and all the ladies who are there from the LPGA 50s, 60s, and 70s. And they're playing at Tuscany Falls Golf Club, Pebble Creek in Arizona. And I really had a good time. A great bunch of people out there playing. Maybe Gloria, do you want to tell me a little bit about the LPGA Scholarship Fund?
I know that I think last year Marilyn gave $25,000 in scholarships to people or young girls from all over, all over the United States. She just does an amazing job. When she first started this, it was maybe she gave like maybe $5,000 to one person, and after 8 years or I think that's as long as she's had this. She's up to 25 scholarships that she gives out. So, and Marilyn's just an amazing person. There's only one Marilyn Smith, and she's just, just a wonderful person.
Yeah, it's truly something you can apply for if you're a golfer in college, you're going to college, a high school golfer, and you want to go to college, and you're getting a golf scholarship. Many of the colleges, Mary B. Porter King does a lot here in Hawaii, in particular, the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association, to help young high school golfers get their college education. They don't necessarily become LPGA professionals or professional golfers or teachers. What they do is they get a great education using the strength of their golf game, and it doesn't have to be the best. It can be, you know, great, good. There are lots of teams that are looking for good golfers, and then you can get possibly a little help because college has gotten really expensive, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. And it's for the high school seniors. And as I said, she just, it's a thing with her from many years ago, before she even started this. So I know she lived back in Dallas, and she had several tournaments back there for the scholarship funds. So this is not just something since she's moved to Goodyear. She did this back in Dallas as well.
I think it all started when she was trying to get some help with going to college, and the coach said to her, if you were a boy, I could help you, but you're a girl, and we don't have scholarship money for girls. And that's sort of, I think that was the genesis of this move on Marilyn Smith's part. Judy Rankin, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us. Appreciate the attention for myself and all of our friends. And we'll do the best we can the next couple days.
Excellent. Susie Burning, I love horses. And so we have an affinity. We have a love in common.
Okay, well, thanks for having us on the show, and thanks for supporting Women's Golf.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Gloria Errett, thank you for organizing the get-together. and thank you for organizing us, having this time to talk on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, and thanks for asking us. And if there's one person here that wants to say aloha.
Hey, Danielle, it's Marga.
Hi! How are you?
I'm good. It's just, I mean, I'm sitting here. It's an honor to be with these three ladies, just listening to them and being in their company. So I missed the last reunion, so this has been a real, real lot of fun and seeing everybody and catching up.
Awesome. You should join me on the show sometime so we can talk again.
Okay, give me a call.
I will.
Or not here, I'm there, but you know.
Aloha. We're going to come back and see if we can help my game. Jason Diger has been working with me since back surgery. So, I don't push it. And if you're coming back, kind of like Tiger Woods, take your time. He finally got it. You got to take your time and let your body heal. We'll be back with Jason Diger, Golf Tech, right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
Have you ever seen a building or a magazine photo or traveled to a place that captured your imagination? Futura Stone's Master Craftsman can transform your vision into a reality. Does your project call out for a permeable pavement, parking area, pool deck, plaza, or grand entry? Bring us your plans. Futura Stone's unique outdoor products and services can turn your resort, building, or home's exterior into an oasis that will last a lifetime. Call Futura Stone, 841-7440 across Hawaii. Futura Stone, only the best.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home, you need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing! 841-2837. Your experts on call. Ah, here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Hey, if you'd like to play a round of golf at Volcano, there's a 10:56 at Makalei. There's a 10:10. Royal Hawaiian Country Club has a 10:20. Olomana has an 11:53. Makaha East has a 9:08. Wailea, it's wide open on the gold course after 10:30. And the emerald course has a 10:20. And Maui Nui has an 11:32 and a 9:40 if you're close by. And at Poipu Bay, they've got Oceans 11. You can play the 7 through 18. Oh, mix that. Excuse me. It's the 8 through 18. My adding and subtracting. I have to go back to school. That's for $115. You can play between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 through 18. It's perfect. You're right along the ocean, and it's Ocean 11. It's perfect at Poipu Bay. Okay, Jason Digert, Golf Tech Hawaii, Center Manager and the Director of Instruction. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Danielle.
So, what we've discovered after my first and second lesson, after my swing analysis, first off, and my first lesson, is that you can walk away from learning something and then have all kinds of doubts about having actually learned it. And then you go back and say, Jason, am I holding this club right?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a little bit of an evolution, if you will, in, you know, in getting solid fundamentals established and then, you know, and then tweaking them slightly just to make sure that the player is utilizing, you know, in our situation here, the hands and the wrists and everything so that you can create the best leverage possible.
Yes.
And a lot of times what we saw with yours is, you had a little bit of a change of grip and, you know, a couple, new pressure points are showing up, a couple new sore spots on the thumb or the palm. And we certainly want to address that. There's definitely some areas of the hands that are the pressure points, and we want to make sure that those are in the correct spot and not you know, not on the pad of the thumb, so that it makes it very sore and you have to you know, wear three gloves to not feel that pain when you're swinging. So.
And yeah. The beauty of this is we didn't make huge changes to the grip. It's not like I do an interlocking. There's three different grips that you could use. And it's not like they're going to come and say to you, hey, you need to completely change the way you hold the club. No, it's more like, you know what? You're not using the strength of this particular part of your hand to the fullest potential so that you have most control over that club, bringing it back, hinging it, and then coming in contact with the ball. So if you just use, and then all of a sudden you go, wow, that's a muscle that this hand has not used before. That's interesting.
Yes. You know, I think this would be a great time to talk about the late, great Arnold Palmer. And, you know, one of the things that he talked about, you look at Arnold Palmer's grip from the old stuff and just a beautiful, technically sound grip. And I remember reading one quip about Arnold, and someone asked him, you know, of all the years that you've learned about the golf swing and learned about playing the game, what's the most valuable tip you can give the readers? And for him, it had to do with the left hand grip, or, you know, the lead arm grip. And for him, he would get into his car, and every time he'd sit in his car, he'd grab his steering wheel with the last three fingers of his left hand and squeeze the steering wheel as hard as he could for 10 seconds.
Wow.
Because those are the, right, those are the squeezers of your left hand. And for a player, it's at the very end of the grip, and that's your ultimate end of that leverage point. And for a player to really develop a secure feel of the grip, a secure feel of the club using those three fingers is key. And I thought that was always really interesting. Of all the amazing things, you know, Arnold Palmer, he was sitting in his car seat. But it just shows you the importance of having a good grip. And and being able to use your hands to control the club head and create speed and all those things that help to produce good golf shots.
Well, so when you said that, I just pretended like I was holding my steering wheel and tightening those three fingers around the wheel, and it's, you can really feel the strength of that. Now, this is another thing that comes up. People tell you you should never grip the club any harder than you would a bird. Now, I need to have strength in my fingers, but I'm not supposed to try to kill the club. I'm not supposed to try to strangle it. So, you know, how do you develop that balance?
I know that is a good one. You know, it's such a good question. And a question I ask a lot of my students is, on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, how hard are you holding the club, between it flying out of your hands up to a white knuckle death grip? And, you know, usually when you're changing the grip for the first time, the tendency is to squeeze a little bit harder because it's new positions and you want to make sure you have a secure hold on the club. Ultimately, you really want that to be probably a 2 on a scale of 1 to 5, maybe 2.5. And that's an interesting thing too, because once you kind of, and Danielle will do this in the bay, and you can do this at home, but once you get your grip on there in a secure way, and you get your creases, we talked a lot about the creases between the thumb and the base of your index fingers, and maintaining those creases while you put your hands on the grip. But once a player gets the left hand and the right hand and everything situated on there well, you know, you give the club a couple waggles and vary your grip pressure from really a 0 to a 5, you know, super, super light. You don't want the club to come separated in your hands. You don't want to lose connection of the hands to the grip. But you will definitely find that between that 0 or 1, where it's very light grip pressure, up to that 5, where you're really squeezing it hard, the amount of feel and the amount of weight that you will feel in the club head, it varies tremendously. And ideally, you want that lighter grip pressure, but still secure, so that you can feel the weight of the head. That's a golfer's feel, which really becomes critical when you start talking about short game and developing your feel for those little wedge shots around the green.
So Jason Dygert, PGA Golf Tech Hawaii Center Manager and Director of Instruction, what I need to do, and everybody needs to do, is take a golf club to work. And you need to just grab it and hold it, and then get, like, become second nature to just grab it and put it in the right position. So everything becomes second nature. It just becomes normal. Then you can worry about how tight you're putting your, and then it becomes like you hold the steering wheel. You don't grab the steering wheel and hold on to it. In fact, if you do that, you're probably going to crash, because you want to have a light touch. You want to feel the car. So the same as that is a wonderful, what you said about Arnold Palmer getting into the car and with his left hand gripping the steering wheel with his three, what fingers did you say again? The three fingers?
The three squeezers of your left hand. I mean, so that would be your pinky, your ring finger, and your
middle finger.
Middle finger. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. I was thinking, looking at my fingers. Well, I'm gonna.
You might even say that. Middle finger. It's the middle finger. Easy.
Just squeeze with that. It's like, that is such a great tip. And then we've got to get comfortable with that club grip, just so that it just, you just grab it, and then you don't worry about whether you're holding it the right way. And I think in the beginning, getting those creases between my thumb and my index finger, getting those, you know, that muscle built up so that it just does it naturally. That's really the question. See, we're taking you through this step by step, and you can go see Jason Dygert, PGA, at Golf Tech Hawaii. Have a swing analysis. Then you get 30-minute lesson in the bay and 30-minute to practice, and you can go over and practice. Jason, can we go over and practice at times when it's not our lesson?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Our plans usually, ideally, we want a player to come in there, say, for a 30-minute lesson and a 30-minute practice, and then before the next lesson, come in for a good hour practice, so that you can spend an hour in the bay going through the drills and using the video feedback to make sure that you're getting good good repetitions of the different things that you're working on with your swing coach.
So you can groove that swing. And what is the number to call?
Our number down at Golf Tech, 441-0105. We're open 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekends.
Excellent. And we'll talk in 2 weeks.
I love it.
I love it. Thank you for being on the show. Aloha. Thanks.
Aloha, Danielle.
We're going to come back and talk with Bob Bupka. Bob Bupka, voice of golf. He's on Talk Sport, and he's host of the Grill Room Golf Show. And he was at Ryder Cup, and he watched us. Well, I said trounce, and I can say it now because I know that there's, you know, when I said it to Peter Alice earlier, it was like, I didn't mean to be gloating or anything, but it was a lopsided victory. We'll be back with Bob Bupka right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Strong, quiet, dependable, reliable. Sounds like a great husband for my daughter. But really, it's your new Rainer garage door. Your home deserves the beauty and dependability that only Rainer can give. Call us today at 676-3667. Ask about our fall special and save money as you improve your home. That's Rainer Hawaii, 676-D-O-O-R.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf easier with the coaching of master PGA teaching professional Claude Brousseau. Claude will simplify your game, scratch golfer or just beginner. As a two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, now with the Ko'olina Golf Academy, you will get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's Claude Brousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Yeah, yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
KPUA Hilo, KGU FM, Honolulu, KGU AM, Honolulu, KONI, Lanai City, KTOH, Kalaheo. Bob Bupka, voice of golf, talk sport, commentator, golf analyst, and host of the Grill Room Golf Show on TuneIn and Golf Week. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Well, Danielle, I don't know if it was accidental or on purpose. You having a guest prior to me talking about hand position on the club, because the day I met you, you said to me, and I remember it distinctly, Bob, you got to get a grip.
Well, you know, don't we all? But in our, I was watching on social media, on Twitter in particular. You were on everybody's golf show except mine during Ryder Cup, and they were taking pictures of you on the microphone on this and this and this station and that station and this station. All, I mean, not only on in the UK, but you were on every, but not on my show. So I have, so glad to have you, sir.
Well, Danielle, let's back up here a minute, because I kept saying to Janice, have we heard from Danielle yet? And she said, I think she's all booked up. She's not going to need you. So even though I was on these other shows, I was crying. Even though, speaking of crying, I have to relay this tale to you, because actually coming to you from New York, we arranged one of my best friends from Austin, Texas, who's the guy that introduced me to Harvey Pienick a good number of years ago, and his name's Sonny Rhodes, and he was actually a pallbearer for Harvey. That's how close they were. But we have a third friend who's been a club professional, I think, since the day he was born. He's legendary in the metropolitan New York area, and he was having a 80th birthday. and the timid invitation that my friend in Austin and I received went as follows. He calls up a few weeks ago and he says, "Hey, Bob, if you and Janice happen to be in Southampton on October 9th, I'm having a little party at my house." I said, "If I happen to be in Southampton," which is 3,000 miles away from where I live. But anyway, so we went to great lengths convincing the birthday boy that we were unable to make it. We were sorry. We were this. We were that. So we meet up in Dallas, and we get on a plane, and all of a sudden the captain comes on, and he says, "Has anybody ever had one of those days?" And we said, "Uh-oh." And he says, "Apparently some birds flew into our engine, and we're not going to be able to use this plane. So just sit patiently, and we'll have to deplane. We'll get you another plane." And, of course, that meant getting another gate. So we very calmly decide, you know, there's nothing we can do. We wait. We go to the new gate. We get on the plane. Same captain. He comes on again. "I told you about those days that don't really work out. Well, apparently there's something wrong with the computer on this plane, so going to be a little bit of a delay." And then he comes on, "Well, we got the computer all fixed, except they forgot to flush out the sanitary system. It won't be much longer." With that, a passenger two seats in front of me jumps up, yells and screams. He was wearing a New York Mets jersey, and the story goes that he was going to the Met game that night in Shea Stadium. He had the jersey of the pitcher that was pitching that night, so he's obviously a diehard fan, and it was his birthday. So the captain says, "You want off this plane?" He says, "Absolutely, I want off this plane, blah, 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 blah." Well, the captain said, "We got to get the jet bridge. You just stand here, and we'll call that jet bridge back, and you can get off the plane." Well, he got off the plane, but it was in handcuffs, because once that plane starts to move, you're not allowed to disrupt the flight like that. So he got arrested, and I was a very good boy, because I was half tempted to yell out, "What are you going to do with your Met ticket?"
Oh, my gosh. And I think,
but we got here safe and sound, and we surprised the birthday boy, and we're going to have quite a celebration tomorrow night. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about being on your show. I'm excited to talk Ryder Cup. So let's get at it.
Okay. You're in the Hamptons. That was a long way of telling us that you're in the Hamptons. Okay, Bob, I'm not jealous. So tell us. Did you think the crowd, the team member, the crowd, was exceptionally rude?
Well, I think several of the people that were there to enjoy the Ryder Cup actually went over the line, cheering for one side or another side, Danielle, and you know this as well as anybody, that the passion that you demonstrate on your show every week for the sport of golf. When it gets down to being vulgar and real off color, I have to draw the line. And I'm not saying it was everybody there. They were certainly in the minority. And then another area that I took exception to, and Janice made particular note of this fact, was they started to yell prior to the European side hitting the golf ball in their backswing while they were addressing the ball. And I just don't think there's any place in golf for that. But, the majority of the people were outstanding, and a lot of people said, "Well, that's what happens when you have crowds that size." It was estimated the attendance in and around 50,000 fans, but I'm good friends with the fellow that's going to have a lot to do with the Ryder Cup in France, and he said their tickets are going to be 70,000 people. So as rowdy as it was at Hazeltine, when we get to Paris in a couple of years, it's even going to be noisier, and who knows what's going to happen there.
Did you expect the result to be as lopsided? I kind of had a feeling, you know, the U.S. would finally win again. There were so many rookies on the European team, but I didn't expect the score to be 17-11.
Well, what you have to do, Danielle, is analyze what 17-11 means, okay? And plug in the fact that Europe was down 4-0 after the first session. Now, 17-11, well, let's see. If we take three matches and switch them the other way, uh-oh, it's 14-14. So it sounds lopsided, 17-11, but under closer scrutiny, it really only was three matches different.
It's true. You're absolutely right. But in the singles, they seem to be coming on. You know, I thought, okay, they're going to make this a competition. But that even started falling apart. What do you think was the biggest issue for the Europeans in performance?
Well, Danielle, when we had a chance to analyze the pairings on Saturday night prior to the Sunday singles, it looked conceivable on paper that the United States could lose all four of the first matches. And the important match was a broadcaster's dream. I mean, you'd have loved yourself being there broadcasting when you get Patrick Reed against Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was like a heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible. Compelling drama. And when that match went in favor of the United States, and you certainly have to give Patrick Reed a lot of credit because Rory McIlroy threw everything that he could at him, and Patrick Reed was up for the charge and certainly played some brilliant golf of his own. So that match is different. And I kind of expected that you know, Sergio Garcia might have a little advantage over Phil Mickelson. Phil, being 46 years old, you know, being his third match of the week, and Sergio shoots 63, and that's not good enough to win.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of highlights there, and of course you have to go back to what transpired on Saturday night with Lee Westwood, one of the nicest guys that you'd ever want to meet, and I certainly would like to have him come on your show one time because he's a super gentleman, and you know, he was a captain's pick and hadn't played particularly well, and then all of a sudden on Saturday night he, on the last hole, hits an incredible drive, hits a fantastic approach shot inside of 3 feet. He was all set to provide Darren Clark with the biggest thank you for picking me that he could ever hope for. And lo and behold, he misses that putt. And it has been documented. Somebody did yell in his backswing. But still, on the 3-foot putt, you would think that he'd be able to make it. He was not able to make it. And that, you know, that was the, you know, real early indication that it was going to go the United States way on Sunday. Because of what happened with Lee Westwood on Saturday night.
Yeah, and Ricky Fowler coming through against Justin Rose really showed that him being chosen was the right move because there was a lot of questions about Ricky, but he just came through.
Good point, Danielle. Very good point. I can honestly say Ricky Fowler was under a tremendous amount of pressure because he was a captain's pick by Davis Love, and there were a lot of insinuations that the only reason he was picked is because he was part of the original task force, later renamed the Ryder Cup Committee. But Ricky, in holding up against Justin Rose, the Olympic gold medal winner, you know, prevailed. So, you know, just in our discussion over the last couple of minutes, think about it. Sergio Garcia could have won shooting 63. That's no stretch. Justin Rose could have defeated Ricky Fowler. That's no stretch. And Rory McIlroy could have defeated, you know, Patrick Reed.
Yeah.
So there you go. But it was wonderful. And I think right now you ought to make arrangements to do your show from just, it's 18 miles away from the Eiffel Tower. And I can hear you now. This is Danielle Tucker coming to you live from the shadow of the Eiffel Tower.
Ah, that would be so wonderful. You know, I would love, are you going to go to France?
Oh, am I going to go to France?
Of course he's going to go to France. Are you coming to...
I might go tomorrow.
You're in the Hamptons. You're in the Hamptons. Of course you're going to go. How about... you're coming to the Tournament of Champions, right?
I wouldn't miss that. Not only an opportunity to see some of the best players in the world, and Maui is one of my favorite destinations in the world, and I'm honored to be on your show when I'm out there. So I'm not missing Maui.
Okay. Now, the next question. Are you going to be at Tiger Woods' debut, number four, for this?
Well, I did have the opportunity to speak to Tiger at the Ryder Cup, and the answer to your question is no, but it's being decided by people a lot higher than me right now that they may want me to go to Turkey. Now, I think I heard them correct. Now, it could have been, hey, listen, Turkey, when they said that, but no, they are contemplating Talk Sport on sending me to Turkey to cover Tiger there, depending on how he plays in California.
This is great. This is Bob Bupka. Okay, he's on Talk Sport in the UK. 3 million people listen to Bob Bupka on Talk Sport in the UK. And, of course, he is host of the Grill Room Golf Radio Show. And that is with, may I mention the other guy who's on the show, perchance? Without
and not while I'm on the air.
Okay,
with you.
Sorry about that. No.
I don't want my feelings hurt. But I think the guy you're talking about is Alex Vasselli.
Yeah, that guy, Golf Week's publisher. Does he do some little job over there at Golf Week?
He used to.
Okay. So Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods. He sets the world on fire. He's going to play in the Safeway Open. It's coming up this week, in case you didn't hear. What do you think? After talking with him and seeing him at Ryder Cup, what do you think?
Well, you know, everybody has their own barometer, I guess, to try and ascertain the physical condition of Tiger Woods. And I have a unique way of evaluating how healthy he is, because when he was in his prime, the majority of his answers were rather short, and he never used too many words. When he was really hurt, his answers were a lot longer. I will say this much. At the Ryder Cup, his answers to every question were really short, so he must be really healthy.
Thank you. You know, I really respected him, too, because after moving out of that group shot, when somebody had to say, hey, Tiger.
Twice,
right? You went from one side to the other. After that, we didn't see him. He was hardly on camera at all.
Well, you know, he got removed from the, let's see, the left side, and he went over to the right side and got removed from that. And then he was seen just a few seconds after that taking a selfie.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of expectations. They're much lower, right? You think that frees him up?
You know, knowing Tiger like I do, Danielle, it really, our expectations are not going to have any effect on him whatsoever. Uh-huh. I think his expectations are very high. Are they realistic? We'll have to wait and see. But it wouldn't surprise me if Tiger was joining us on the line right now to be on your show, and you asked him directly, what do you hope to accomplish at Safeway, I can pretty much guarantee his answer would be, well, I expect to win, because if I didn't expect to win, I wouldn't be teeing it up.
Exactly. Exactly. And the other question is he going to want to – he loves his kids. Every father loves his kids. Some fathers don't spend a whole lot of time with their kids because they have to work for a living they actually have to get a paycheck. You can't say, hey, I'm going to take off and be with the kids, because if you do that, they get fired, you know? Tiger Woods has a whole bunch of money at his disposal, and he could actually just walk away and say, I'm going to just raise my kids. Do you think he will dedicate himself to practicing grooving the swing, the way he did when he wasn't a father?
Well, you know, that really is a marvelous question. And you know, it's probably, in my humble opinion, if he enjoys, just like so many of your listeners, I can pretty much say this next statement with certainty. One of your listeners goes out and plays relatively well for them. They're far more excited about the next time they're going to play. They're far more likely maybe to take a half hour to do some practicing. And I think that's exactly going to be the case of Tiger. If he comes back and he can see the light at the end of the tunnel, I think he'll go after it with everything that he's worth. If he comes back and the swing is not there and the mental sharpness doesn't allow him to focus to the degree that you need to compete now against the best players in the world, I think you will see a fairly rapid decline in the appearances of Tiger. He's going to give it this one last shot for all he's worth, and he's practicing hard. There's no doubt about that. I've got confirmed reports from Florida just how hard he is practicing. He's optimistic, but as everybody knows, you know, it's a far cry from that practice tee until when you put that peg in the ground in a PGA Tour event.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to you about his success. Maybe if you have a few minutes next Saturday, if you're not, you know, taken up in the Hamptons, or if you haven't flown to Turkey yet, Mr. Jet Setter, that would be fun. We could chat, because by Saturday we'll know a lot, won't we?
Yeah, we really will. And as always, it'd be a lot of fun for me to be on your show. I always appreciate it, because the one thing that motivates me to do anything in the world of golf is to be involved with people that have a passion for the sport. And your name is right up near the top of the list of people that I've met through golf that has this wonderful passion. And, hey, let's count on it. We'll have some fun next Saturday. We'll see what Tiger's done on Thursday and Friday. And we'll talk about it.
Excellent. Bob Bupka, you are the best. Voice of Golf, golf reporter for Talk Sport in the UK. He may be traveling to Turkey to cover Tiger Woods. Kind of depends on how he does at the Safeway Open. Co-host of the Grill Room Golf Show, Tune In Radio. Listen, anytime you feel like it, he's right there. Tune in. It's the Grill Room Golf Show. We'll be back. It's time to end the show, because Bob, thanks for being on the show with me.
A pleasure, Danielle. A real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you to all the people who make it possible for Bob and I to get together and talk golf. Rainer Doors, the overhead door used to protect the Lamborghini showroom, providing lasting security and safety for your business. It's Rainer Doors. Claude Brousseau, master PGA professional, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Vision 54 coach, Aimpoint certified, Golf Channel lead coach. You need a lesson with Claude Brousseau. He's at Coolina. Claude Poubet Golf Course, 18 championship holes, hosted the PGA of America Grand Slam of Golf for over 10 years. You know, it's an outstanding golf course for golfers of all abilities. It's the Point Puvei Golf Course, Kauai South Shore Gem, and they've got the Ocean 9 now from 7 to 8 in the morning. It's $115, and you play 8 through 18. You get 11 holes. It's an awesome opportunity. There's also the Ocean 9. They've got so many different opportunities for you to play 7 holes, 9 holes, 11 holes, or 3 holes. That's Point Puvei Golf Course. Futura Stone. Futura Stone's master craftsman can turn your building, your parking lot, your company or home project into artwork. Futurestone, use the pavers, because underneath those pavers, they'll put some mesh. Ask for the mesh to protect the water, okay? And make sure that nothing gets into the groundwater or runs off into the ocean. It's Futurestone, only the best. Creative plumbing, yes. Whether you're building a hen house, a shopping center, a store, a custom home, or a townhouse, you gotta call Creative Plumbing. It's gotta be done right. Creative Plumbing. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club. Thank you for your mana. You can always hear us at RadioGolfClub.com.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2016.